Okay, thank you all very much. Our next presenter is Johnny. Johnny's a guy from England, one of my master tennis performance specialist buddies. We put the together at the same time. He is a fantastic strength and conditioning coach from England, and also does some tennis teaching as well. He specializes in the 10 and under, and you guys will really enjoy this wonderful presentation. Thank you, John.
Okay, so first of all, pleasure to be here. Great lineup from Mark from the ITPA. Absolute pleasure. It's great to see so many people here. So, like Robert said, I'm a strength and conditioning specialist, alongside being a tennis coach. And I work at an academy in a city called Sheffield, which is in the north of England. And my role there is sort of running the mini tennis performance players, so working with the players who play a little bit more. I also own a business called Science and Tennis, which is a sports science business, working obviously in tennis, providing strength and conditioning support, psychology, and performance nutrition. So my background is actually in sports science. Sort of did my undergraduate and postgraduate in exercise physiology. So at the time of this presentation, there might be a little bit of physiology. I just get very excited about that, so I do apologise about that. But yeah, hopefully you enjoy it, and please feel free to ask any questions at any time. So what I want to talk about today is I want us to consider what the fundamental movement skill for yoga tennis players, and that's already been touched on. There's been some great presentations already. We're already sort of into the second hour. Why is it important to train these fundamental movement skills? And what is our role as coaches delivering these fundamental movement skills? Consider the keystone movements and the benefits they have. Now, I have to say, I'm a bit of a fraud. I have copied and used a lot of great things from coaches that I've seen before. So I'd like to say all my work is original, but it most certainly isn't. But I think as coaches, that's what we do. We utilise good practice that we see, and then with the players that we're working with, we adapt that, change that, and use that accordingly. And then I just want to talk about how we deliver this message to the young people that we're coaching, because that's an important role for us as coaches. We work with a range of people in how we communicate and deliver our sessions to young people will vary massively from maybe adults or the teenagers that we work with. So, this is one thing from a strength and conditioning coach in Sheffield, the university that I'm friends with and that I work with. He comes up with these three questions. So, at this conference today, has it confirmed your learnings? Which is a great thing. So, if you're sitting through this presentation, and I'm sure a lot of you guys will know all the things that I'm going to talk about, it should be a good thing. You should be thinking, that's great, I know all that stuff, and I can use that accordingly. Have you got any new learnings? So, is there something that you've learned today that you can take away and use with the players that you work with? And then, are there any burning issues? Are there issues that you're not too sure about that I've kind of talked about, and you maybe want to throw out some questions, and then we can have a discussion about it? So please feel free at any time to throw some questions out there. This is the other thing that I'm very interested in, is as a coach. Are we artists or are we scientists? So Mark mentioned already about evidence-based, that we need to utilise the evidence base in an effective way. So does that make us a scientist? Or, as a coach, we're working with different people day in, day out. Are we artists? So how do we deliver our practice to the people that we're working with? And for me, great coaching is combining both of these in the middle. So we're using our evidence base, but then we're using it accordingly based on the people that we're working with. So it's already been mentioned about how you change your practice when you're working with an older player, a performance player, to an 8-year-old who they're really not too sure what you're talking about. So how do we adapt and change our practice? So Again, this is something that I want you to think about throughout this presentation, and using the evidence base, the science behind what I'm talking about, and then as an artist, how can I use that with my players that I'm working with? So Martin's already mentioned sort of the fundamental movement skills. Now, I'm sure you guys have seen these all before. So we've got our motor skill competencies. We have agility, balance, coordination. We have the ability to accelerate, decelerate, and then re-accelerate. Jumping, hopping, skipping, landing, and rebounding. Now, if I think about tennis, working with young people, of course, we use all these. We have our receiving skills. We have our sending skills. We have rhythm, flow, and fluidity. Now, this is something that I personally feel is really, really important, and you wouldn't consider it a motor skill competency or a fundamental movement skill. But the ability to develop rhythm, flow, fluidity with young people is such an important aspect of coaching. So are they going to be robotic, or do you embrace their individuality? Do you embrace how they move, how they learn, all these different things? So these are the fundamental movement skills that I'm sure you guys are more sort of familiar with. Out of interest, how many of you worked on 10 tennis players? Well, that's great. So again, any questions, please feel free.
What is cushioning?
Cushioning. Cushioning is kind of the ability to absorb. So say, for example, if we think about how a player would move, a young player would move on a court, a lot of the time they don't really use their legs. They're very upright. So the ability to load, cushion, and then hit and recover is kind of what cushioning refers to. Any other questions, everyone? Yeah.
How do you work with the 10 and under player with on rhythm?
Without rhythm.
How do you work on their rhythm? I mean, older kids you can do like jump rope and stuff, but like under 10, it's really hard to do.
Yeah. I think skipping is actually a great one. I use skipping a lot. There's a couple of videos I'm going to show of exercises that kind of help teach rhythm and flow, kind of using sort of some sending and receiving skills. Definitely big skipping. I think the video I'm going to show that involves sort of using a tennis ball to kind of cushion low and sort of changing the speed. Other things, I've used metronomes before. They work quite well, I have to say. Obviously, it doesn't really teach. Tennis isn't the same beat rhythm again and again. The rhythm and flow changes, but it does begin to help young people begin to understand rhythm. So maybe having a metronome that has a side step, touch the line, side step, touch the line, that helps. I see one of the other coaches that I work with uses bongos. He's a musician, he's a drummer, so he loves it. He gets his bongos out, and the kids love it, doing animal games. Things like that's how I would consider teaching rhythm, flow, and fluidity to young people. Anything else? I'm pretty happy. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Jai, when you're talking about programming in things like the skipping and the jumping and all, do you add in with these younger kids any kind of corrective stuff with them? So when we go through with our older kids and they're doing their dynamic warm up, I'm looking for their imbalances and see if there's things that then we need to work on, from running form to just a general imbalance. Do you do that with the younger kids as well, or is it just letting them do the activity?
Sure, yeah, no, I think that's a great point, Richard. how I would do that is, say, for example, if you're doing lots of animal movements, for example, you would tell them to imagine that they've got to squeeze a 20-pound load between their shoulder blades. So you're beginning to teach them about sort of posture, retraction of their shoulders, things like hip work. Again, if you kind of talk about animal movements, or even to they actually even like using the bands. Kids get excited about equipment, they love it. So if you set up sort of some monster walks, things like that, they begin to, you kind of sneak them in without them really knowing. So that's how I would kind of go about that. That answers your question. So why is it important to develop these fundamental movement skills? Well, first of all, sport is made up of fundamental movement skills. It's built on these building blocks of movement skills. If we can't do the fundamental movement skills in the previous slide, how can we expect our young people to learn how to hit forehand? If they can't hold their body weight, they can't be strong, they can't be stable, they can't be balanced, and we're expecting them to load and hit a forehand or backhand or serve. How can we teach them a sport specific skill? Just picking up on what Mark's kind of said about tennis being a long term life sport, I think if we develop these fundamental movement skills from a young age, it provides a positive association with sport and exercise. And you know, the long term benefits of that are obvious. Health benefits, obviously, loads of health benefits, improved bone density, cardiovascular health, neuromuscular control, and mental health. And if we have a young under 10 player who, as they develop, they go through the process and they may want to look at specialising in the sport. If from a young age, working with the parents, they understand that strength and conditioning is important, that it's part of the process, it's not about hitting balls on court. We also have, at the Academy where I work, we have a sports psychologist coming in. He comes in twice a week to do half an hour sessions with the groups, and obviously it's very basic stuff, but the kids love it, you know, he's great with them, and it begins to teach about the interdisciplinary, holistic approach to coaching. So plenty of benefits from doing it from a young age, not only for physical benefits, but also lifestyle benefits as well. So why are we going to do it from that young age? Well, ultimately, from a young age, that the brain has this plasticity, it has this ability to absorb information, it can take it in. Now, I definitely specialised in tennis way too young, I played lots of it, I got injured, and I have to say, trying to learn different sports, for example, trying to learn Olympic lifting in my field has been a challenge. Trying to learn new skills has been tough. And if I'd learned all these fundamental moving skills and these skills when I was younger, it would definitely make my life a lot easier when I'm trying to learn new sports and skills. So all that information, the brain's like a sponge, it takes it all in. And if we can get our young people to learn these skills, it's going to make our life a lot easier and their lives a lot easier as time goes on. So, what I'm kind of telling you here is to help my under 10 tennis player learn how to learn the fundamental movement skills and then learn the sport specific skills that will help them get better. It's true. The fundamental movement skills that I showed in that first, that sort of second, third slide, are definitely there. But there are, for me, underlying factors in ways in which to develop these. And this is where we come on to strength. So, strength training and working with young people has been a very contentious issue. But in recent years, the last 4 or 5 years, there's lots of evidence base coming out where strength training for young people has its benefits. Now, of course, what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about load them up with silly weights and get them doing all these sort of crazy things in the gym. It's not that whatsoever. But if we can introduce some basic strength training methods that I'm going to talk about, then it's going to help them learn these fundamental movement skills. So the gains in which that young people develop strength is from neural gains, it's not from hormonal gains. So, for example, it increases motor unit recruitment, so they can use more of their muscle. It has helped synchronization of their body. And if we're talking about teaching a sport-specific skill like a forehand or a backhand, it requires a lot of synchronization for a young person. So if we can maybe introduce these strength elements, it's going to help them learn the sport-specific skill. It's got many benefits, obviously physical benefits as well. So it appears, therefore, to develop these fundamental movement skills that I've shown in the previous slides, there has to be an element of strength training to help that. So, like I said, the evidence base is coming out more and more now that strength training with young people with well-qualified, controlled programs is a benefit. And the more, if you typed in from, 2012 into Google Scholar, will come up with lots of position statements from the UKSEA, which is the UK Strength Conditioning Association, the NFCA, BASES, which is the British Association of Sport and Exercise Science. More and more position statements coming out that it's a safe and effective sort of training that you can do with young people. And this is where I want to talk about these keystone movements that I talk about in my objective. There's a really well-known strength conditioning coach in the UK called Kelvin Giles, and he's come up with these keystone strength movements. These include lunging, squatting, pushing, pulling, rotating, bracing, and hinging. So with young people, if you can teach these skills, these strength skills, in theory it's going to help their fundamental movement skills. These should be done at every speed. So we're working movements at every speed. Tennis, again, working with young under 10 players, the speed changes in tennis. So they need to be able to do these keystone movements at different speeds. They need to do it in every direction. So if we think about a lunge pattern, a forward lunge, a lateral lunge, a drop step lunge, every amplitude, every complexity. So if we can give our young people this movement vocabulary using these keystone movements, their ability to perform the fundamental movement skills and therefore the sport-specific skills will be, you know, unbelievably beneficial. This transfer allows stronger stances, greater balance, greater efficiency, and more control of the body. And that's something that I'm saying again and again to the young people I work with. Control your body. Learn how to use your body effectively. And then, like I've already mentioned, it allows them to help synchronize their body and then use the kinetic chain. So the kinetic chain starts from the floor all the way up. So if I think about forehand, it starts from the ground, I load into the ground and then hit through the ball, so I'm using the chain of my body. If we can do these keystone movements, it helps utilize that kinetic chain, which if we think about an injury reduction point of view, that's going to help distribute the force evenly across the body rather than excessive loading through the shoulder, elbow, wrist, for example. So this is what I base a lot of my fundamental movement skills training on. So like I've already kind of mentioned, we develop the keystone movements, we develop control of the body, we then develop movement efficiency and robustness. Now I was talking to a girl I know who works at the LTA, the Tennis Association, and she used the word robustness when you're working with tennis athletes, when you're working with players who are on the tour. And robust, being robust is a great word because that's what tennis players have to be. They have to deal with it day in, day out. Training, being on court. So I think that's a great term to use. Also, what we need to do is we need to use the fundamental movement skills in the keystone movements. We need players to effectively produce force, effectively reduce force, and then effectively stabilize their body. So again, if I think about, if I'm accelerating for a backhand, I need to produce force to move across the ball. I then need to decelerate, and then I need to stabilize myself to hit the ball. So developing these strength keystone movements allows the development of all three of those. Yeah, this is just a lot of this, it is evidence-based, but I also think it's the art here of putting these things into practice. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah?
I'm assuming you also use the multilateral sports approach.
Yes.
So if you use, do you teach this use of the other sports? And my second question is, what's the reaction of your athletes and their parents?
Yeah, I think definitely from a young age, I don't want to touch on sports specialization too much, so there's going to be some presentations on that. But from my point of view, like, playing lots of sports is definitely an important aspect when you're working with under 10, even under 12 players, and I think it's such an important part. Like I mentioned there about the ability to do these movements at different speeds, different complexities, they learn that from lots of other sports. I completely agree with what you're saying with regards to that. Any other questions? Unhappy? Okay, cool. But I sound a bit funny, obviously, it's because of the information and so on. So, yeah. Right. Let's move on. So this is a little sort of analysis that I do very quickly. It doesn't take too long. Using this Kelvin Giles and stuff. If you haven't heard of him or seen anything, please check out movementdynamics.com. is referenced at the end, but the stuff that he produces I think is excellent. And us as tennis coaches, we should definitely be looking to use. So we go through a very quick process. Obviously it's subjective, you kind of watch what's the player. So how do they squat, how do they single leg squat, how do they lunge, how do they brace? So a bracing example would be asking them to do a plank. How do they push? So some sort of push-up exercise. How do they pull? A hinge movement. So if we're not too sure what a hinge movement is, it's basically like a deadlift. So can they hinge from their hip and then drive up? If we think about tennis, we're hinging our hip all the time, where we're firing, kind of, as I talk to the kids about firing from their pocket when they hit the ball. The synchronization, I've kind of talked about, between their left and right side. The landing, what's their landing like? Is it controlled? Is it balanced? And then we've got a landing for a single leg hop and then a lateral hop. So a very quick screen can kind of give you an idea of this player here. Looking at it, they're getting five very good, one is not so good. So we have twos for a single leg landing, forwards, laterally, and a single leg squat. So for me, straight away, that's suggesting that this player needs to maybe spend a bit of time working on some single leg work. And this isn't just for under 10 tennis players. You guys might have a player who's 13 or 14 that they're coming to you and they haven't developed these fundamental movement skills. So really, hopefully what I'm talking about here today doesn't necessarily apply to under 10 tennis players. It applies to any tennis player that you have. But if we can develop this from a young age, then we can, you know, we're kind of hedging our bets and hopefully reducing that chance of injury and maximizing their enjoyment of tennis, either from a performance level or, you know, playing a sport through life. So solid foundations, that's the key. Develop these sport-specific skills, or tennis-specific skills, as we want to say, on these solid movement foundations. Yeah.
Going back to the previous slide, you would do an assessment on the entire group if you had a group of X amount of kids under 10 with this assessment?
Yes and no. In the, you, doing a quick eyeball then of the players, yeah, you could do.
And then you mentioned that if they did have, let's say the lunge wasn't to your liking, how would you go about corrective? Would you give them corrective exercises to do on their own, or would you try to incorporate in a group, or would you give something more specialized?
Yeah, but with the other players, I probably would stray away from giving any corrective exercise on their own individually, because they wouldn't do it. I think I would generally try and do it in the warm-up, for example, you know, try and throw a few movements in the warm-up, or in some sort of we tag on strength conditioning sessions within the group, so they have half an hour afterwards. So try and tie this sort of stuff in those sessions. Yeah. Anything else?
How much cueing and how much coaching are you doing under 10? Like, is there a specific difference between children between 8 and 10 and 5 and 7 in terms of coaching and cueing?
Yeah, definitely. I think you can, from my perspective, the 8, 9, 10 year olds that I work with, they actually really get into their strength and conditioning. They seem to, they love it. And we are lucky enough, the university that I studied at, I set up a session there where they go down and use the strength and conditioning suite, which is an amazing facility. So they can definitely get into more of the kind of the nitty gritty, as it were. You know, you can really, you know, they know what they need to be doing. They're amazing. But they know that for a split squat, their weight has to come through their front heel, They know that their posture has to be tall and strong. With the younger ones, it's just a case, again, of maybe using cueing or phrases like I maybe said about squeezing a 20-pound note between their shoulder blades, then straight away they get the form. But again, you can't be doing it for too long, otherwise they'll lose their concentration. So just very quickly, if we develop these fundamental movement skills, it then leads on nicely for us when we get into working with the older players, developing these physical capacities in a more in-depth level, where we're developing metabolic conditioning, flexibility, mobility, agility, and strength. they've got these fundamental movement skills, these foundation keystone movements, so it makes our lives a lot easier. And I've just written a review with a couple of guys. It's going to be in the SCMS journal. Just looking at what is the evidence base for strengthening initiative for the junior player. And generally, obviously, it's come after it's good, but it has to be done in certain ways and ways in which we deal with it. So here we go. We've got our keystone movements. We develop those. We then develop our fundamental movement skills from those keystone movements, and then we can develop our tennis skills. We can develop our footwork, our body work, and our technical elements such as the path, angle, speed of the racket. So just give it a go now. So just going through progressions, one up to five in difficulty. Slightly changing the complexity there. So again, just a racket. Kids have got their rackets with them, so it makes it nice and easy. You'll hear my voice moving, queuing, and doesn't sound great, to be honest. Again, I'm gonna give you a show and tell you the progressions. The art of coaching is being creative, using it how you want to use it, and developing it yourselves, really. It's just an idea. So we're changing the planes of motion now. So that's one of our keystone movements, getting the medicine ball involved. Again, like medicine ball, football, whatever you've got, just can be used. So we've got some push progressions. Some squat progressions. So hands in front, first of all. Again, cues you might use with young kids to say like a glass of water on their head so that it's not tipping down a big jet. Like Iron Man, imagine you've got whatever Iron Man has on his chest. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty cool. You're going to an overhead squat. I thought the overhead squat is one of the keystone movements. It shows great mobility, it shows great strength. Next one here. So hinge progressions. So start off nice and simple. Can you get your bum there to touch the wall?
One more like that. I was saying so much better than that. There you go.
So finally from the hip, using the hip. Did that first time as well. Hit the racket. So pretty pleased with that. I was running that time as well. Yeah. Now, I love it now we're in the close-up as well. I mean, I got quite excited when I was doing some of these. I didn't video some of the kids, but and obviously I've got their parents' permission and things like that, but I just wasn't too sure about using them over here. So, and then flow and rhythm. I haven't done all of the fundamental movements, so this is a great one. Just can you think throughout the lower body, the like crazy walk, and then kind of think figure of eight. So I like to use kayaking as an example. You think about how you kayak, you really use your whole body. Your upper body to have that flow. Okay, so there's force production, stabilization. So reduce force, stabilize. Okay. Complexity getting harder.
Nice, big circles to do.
So this is a cushioning exercise. Again, you can have a metronome, like I said, you can have a rhythm.
Change.
So a quick change of pace. Again, cushioning, loading, reducing force, stabilizing. There we go. So there are a few examples of exercises that you might want to try and use using those sort of keystone movements. Obviously, I haven't shown all of the keystone movements, but kind of gives you a flavor of how to progress and regress. So here's a little chart of progressions and regressions. We start off nice and easy. So obviously, push-ups, we start off with the wall push-ups, and then by the end, progression 5. If my 10 and under player is doing sets of 10, sets of 12 reps of push-ups well, then you can challenge them a little bit more. We've got our pulling movement, we've got our squatting movement that we've kind of shown there, so front squat, hands behind head, overhead squat, maybe move to a goblet squat with a little bit of load, and then into squat variations with load. What else have we got on there? So yeah, just general progression. We've got lunges, starting with the racket, and then into sort of lunge patterns. And lots of single leg stuff work as well, because sport, tennis is played on the single leg a lot of the time. If you're expecting a young player to, when they're playing a match, a 10-year-old, they're using mini green balls, they're moving, they're landing and loading on one leg. Like how can they do that if they haven't got these keystone movements and these fundamental movement skills? So here's another example, maybe a quick serve that you might want to do. For example, maybe sort of 60, 90 seconds on each one. So the start, this maybe would be with some sort of maybe 7 or 8 year olds. So the start would be some animal movements, give them different animals, kids love that. They'll have imagination. You can keep cueing them, like I said, if needed. You then go into a little circuit. So we've got push-up tennis, where kids are in a push-up position, throw the ball to each other. Skipping, like I mentioned, I think skipping is a great one for rhythm and flow. Our squat progression, ball tennis, which are where they're maybe playing a little match over the net, they have to throw the ball low and throw it back. A split squat progression, so a lunge progression that involves this sort of movement. And then a wheelbarrow deadlift, so partner up, one kid's in a press up position, the other one's behind them, they have to kind of deadlift them up. And then, you know, that's 60 seconds, do that twice through. Warm up, relay races at the end, kids love competition, they love running, and our acceleration, re-acceleration, deceleration in there, and we kind of tick a lot of boxes, hopefully, in that one session. Another way that you can maybe look at doing it, instead, so this is maybe added on, like I said, for 30 minutes at the end of the session, is actually in a tennis coaching session, per se. Now, I know obviously this opens up questions. Parents are like, well, they haven't got a racket in their hand. They haven't, however, again, this is our role to educate the parents, to talk to them, to sell the benefits of what we're doing. I think as a coach, you are an artist, you're a scientist, but also you can be an actor or an actress, you know, on court. I don't know what some people are like. Sometimes I'm acting, like, knackered at home, I go into work and then boom, I'm on it straight away, so you're an actor. And also you've got to be a bit of a salesperson. You've got to sell your philosophy and what you believe in to the parents and to the players that you work with. So you might have a 10-minute warm-up, which is maybe a ramp warm-up, which is a raise, activate, mobilize, potentiate warm-up. You then do your tennis-based skill warm-up over the net. You then go into the keystone movement, you have a breakout for 5 or 10 minutes where you throw some of these keystone movements. You then go back to working on that particular coaching cue. So if you're working on, say, grip on the forehand with your 7, 8 year olds, and they can spend 10 minutes on that. You have a second breakout where you do maybe another keystone movement. You continue with your coaching thing for 10 minutes, and then you go into a fun game at the end where maybe they place the points or whatever you feel is necessary. OK, again, it's trial and error. Not a lot. Some of this stuff's worked for me, some of it hasn't. And like I said, a lot of the stuff that I'm using is stolen from other great coaches. I've got a massive acknowledgement list at the end of coaches. So it is really trial and error, and you know, experience is so important. I'm pretty much at the start of my experience of working with tennis players. So concentration, just very quickly moving on. How to get SpongeBob in there, so I'm a big fan of SpongeBob. But there's research to say that concentration of young people is their age, their chronological age, plus one. So if you're working with a six-year-old, their maximum concentration span is 7 minutes, and you've got a 45-minute session with them. How can you manage that? How can you just focus on one particular coaching cue within tennis? And that's where I believe movement breakouts are so important. You can do 7-8 minutes work on technique, you can do a movement breakout. And this is where the art of coaching and understanding the people that you work with is so important. So the use of external cueing. So external cueing basically relates to the environment that the young people, say, you're working with, associated with. So an internal cue might be, for example, bend your knees. That's the example of an internal cue. It's related to your body, where an external cue might be related to the environment. So, for example, with jumping, you might say push the floor away. Or with a throwing overarm, instead of saying, okay, you've got to bend your legs and you've got to just release the ball nice and high, you might just set up some targets and say, right, aim for that target. And it's amazing how more effective external cueing is with young people from my personal experience. And again, the research there, internal cue taxes the athlete's attentional capacity and can lead to inefficient muscular activation. So why would you want to give a cue that isn't effective? We've probably all been there, you know, from coaching. We coach different people and they're having an absolute worldy of a session. They're playing unbelievably well. And they're like, do you know what, Johnny? I wasn't even thinking then. And that's what it is a lot of the time. It's getting people to use the environment, use cues around them, and maybe not thinking too much because it can be inefficient. Obviously, there has to be some thought process. Yeah.
Could you give some examples of internal versus an external?
Yeah, so I'll just move on to that. So, so for example, when jumping, push the floor away rather than bend your knees and drive up. So, if I say, okay, just push into the floor, jump. Instead of saying, like, bend your legs and then use your arms, go straight away, jump higher. When throwing, aim at a target. It is amazing. Whenever with the older kids I do some measurable testing, their first throw, maybe not as good. The second throw, put the cone out, they hit the cone, and then progressively, as I keep moving the cone further and further away, their measurable throw gets longer. So, you know, using something within the environment to help them does seem to produce a positive result. So, like I said, when squatting, imagine you've got a glass of water on your head. So a glass of water, head up, and then straight away, or even just put a beanbag on their head, and they keep their head up, and they squat down, rather than saying, keep the eyes looking forwards. When decelerating, a nice wide pyramid base, because all kids know what pyramids are, rather than saying a wide stance with your legs. So, it's using the environment, it's using cues that young people will be familiar with, and I can't keep coming back to the art of coaching. That is a skill that I'm still developing, and knowing how to work with different people. So, moving that. So, hopefully, from the presentation that I talked about, that Martin's touched on, that Mark's already touched on. You know, tennis is a sport for life. It's something that, regardless of your level, your ability, it's a sport that you can use throughout life. And starting from this very young age, if we can give our young people a positive association with tennis, then they'll hopefully enjoy it for the rest of their lives. And that's where I think these keystone movements, helping develop these fundamental movement skills, will give them this positive association. Sessions should be developed with confidence, be fun, and allow young people to solve the problem. So don't overcoach. Everyone in this room will be a great coach. And the danger that I found is overcoaching, definitely. Giving people way too much information, being way too scientific and evidence-based on everything. Coaching is an art form, combining both is the key. Use child-friendly explanations. So kids need to understand what you're talking about. Use external cueing, for example, to allow that to happen. Keep activities simple, change activities frequently, and strength training from a young age is definitely beneficial if done in a well-controlled, safe manner through using those keystone movements. So there are just a few references. Obviously, you'll get the slide, so don't be there. And just a few acknowledgements from people. Like I said, not really my original work, but some great people have come throughout my career. So thanks very much for listening. If you've got any questions, we've got 2 minutes or so, we need to move on. But thanks. Cool. Yeah, go for it, yeah.
So in younger children, use of the hips, especially in recovery.
Yeah.
Can you give some things that you do? Because it's tough to say to 6-year-olds, we're going to work on your hips today in your recovery, but it's a real difficult thing.
As in?
Well, what you can do to help, like, the recovery move.
Right, so like a prop over.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, definitely for me, using football and medicine ball, and just that example of that sort of that rhythm on there, where it just kind of goes like this straight away, gets them to understand how to use their hips. Being basic karaoke steps, that sort of thing, teaching basic karaoke steps, begin to introduce that sort of teaching that skill.
Sixes really struggle with karaoke. That's really hard to walk at first, but that's just an area I struggle with personally as a coach.
Because
it's obviously so important, incredibly important. You think a lot of that's a hidden, not recovering part.
Definitely, yeah. I think walking through is a great thing. No, I do that. They're really struggling. They need to have some markers that they have to touch as they kind of move along. So, again, given like an external cue, which helps them.
Sorry, one more question. You keep referring to animals.
Beautiful. So obviously, is everyone happy with the Spider-Man, Spider-Person movements, where you're kind of crawling on the floor, like a spider? Everyone's seen that one? A great one is, this is going to be brilliant, it's like a seal. So they have to hold their body weight, move like that. For example, if you're talking about scapular retraction, thinking they're like a bird. They have to like move like a bird, like this. Basically, ask the kids, say, how does this animal move like? And boom, they'll do it. So just think it's different animals. They'll do it. All right. And then you coach it really from there. I can give much more.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Brad.